Well, welcome everybody to yet another edition of Forever Bristol City Podcast. I'm delighted this morning to be joined by Dave Fevs and Ian and myself, obviously. And we're talking in the wake of a 1-0 defeat against former Premier League side Southampton. No disgrace losing to a side that has got a much bigger financial advantage than we've got. Ian and Dave, I'll start with you, Dave, first. Yeah, what were your thoughts at the final whistle? Just a brief, not detailed analysis of the game, but, you know, not too disheartened.
I thought it was an all right performance. I think there were good bits and bad bits in it. And kind of, I think it typified kind of how we've played this season, really. In that, you know, it's sometimes we've played some good stuff and sometimes we've not played some good stuff. And yeah, I think they scored a worldie to win the game, but I think second half they kind of dominated it a bit, and probably, you know, they might have got something if they'd not got that one as well. So there wasn't a lot in it, and no. I think there's, you know, encouragement to be taken, I think.
Yeah. Ian, your thoughts at 9:30 or whenever it was?
Well, the first half was an excellent performance, probably our best performance away from home this season. We should have gone in 2-0 up, but at the moment, poor old Tommy Conway can't buy a goal. In the second half, I don't really want to say we reverted to type, but we did. I think Southampton up their game. Russell Martin obviously got into them at halftime and said, look, you need to be right on top of your game. You need to pass the ball quicker. One thing I noticed a lot was when they passed the ball to their forward players or their players in midfield, and our players got touch tight. They turned us quite easily and got into space in between the lines. But overall, I thought the first half, it's what happens when you play good teams and you're not clinical.
Yeah.
And the difference between Saturday, we got the two goals, albeit one was a penalty. And last night, we didn't. Second half, I was disappointed, and we lost Naismith through injury, which is becoming a little bit too prevalent.
Well, somebody said on Twitter last night, he is turning into a bit of a sick note. Dave, the lineup, there was a predicted, everybody knew Cam Pring wasn't going to play. There's two things about the lineup or the match day squad. Was it, did we, and I'll hold my hand up, I've only seen the highlights of the game, all right? So I'm not professing to get into the detail. The BBC shows the lineup almost like as a back three of Viner, Dickey and Naismith, with Tanner and Sykes pushing up as de facto wingbacks. But you know, the lineup, it wasn't surprising. And how did it have that 3-5-2 about it, or not really?
Yeah, definitely. So I think the 11 itself, I don't think anyone would have been hugely surprised going into the game with that 11. I think it was natural for Naismith to come in for Pring without making too many changes. But as you said, yeah, we did play a back three. So we did play those three. And at times, our wing-backs played more like full-backs. And at times, they played like wing-backs. What we did do, we played depend on how you want it. If you want to call it a back three, we played a 3-4-3. If we want to say we had a back five, then we played a 5-2-3. We played Knight wide, not wide on left, on the left of the three up front, which is where he typically plays for Ireland. Obviously Conway in the middle and played Bell on the right. And then we had James and Gardner-Hickman as the two in midfield. And you know, when we didn't have the ball, we made it difficult for them and kind of basically went into a kind of 5-4-1 at that point. But what we did do in the first half was we sprung quite well. Ian said earlier, kind of, you know, best away or first half was the best we've played kind of in a half this season. I thought there were a couple of other games this season away from home where we played really, really well. And that was Hull and Swansea. I thought we created plethora of chances in those games. So those game, that first half reminded me of those two games. That's probably what I'd say.
Okay. Ian, the lineup, what was causing some consternation amongst fans before was that he's only named seven subs. Now, you know, that there's an argument for filling the bench with youngsters. What was your thoughts on the lineup and that, you know, leaving two empty seats on there?
I think the reason he leaves two empty seats is he'd rather that the under-21s played 90 minutes this week without the inconvenience of travelling down to Southampton and sitting on a cold bench all night and not getting a game. Because, no, let's be honest, no footballer likes to not get a game. So it's very rare. I mean, what could you do if you added in another two? Who else was there? You could have played Yeboah, I suppose, not Yeboah, Arroyo, who seems to have, I wouldn't say disappeared off the scene, but he doesn't seem to have been anywhere near the first team under Pearson or Manning. We've got a few lads out on loan. So was he going to strengthen the squad, particularly by bringing in a couple of youngsters? For me, no. Or you can only play five subs anyway. So I mean,
given the experience, though, warming up in front of a crowd.
What difference is that going to make? I mean, some of these young kids play international games where they'll be watched by quite a few people. So, you know, for their under-18s or under-21s. So, yeah, you can do it. As I think it's a little bit of a reward. But they're training with the first team because Leo Manning said they're playing a few 11v11s. So, no, I think it's understandable. If we had a stronger squad, you know, if Naki was fit, it would have been eight. And if Ross McCrory was fit, he might have started, but, it would have been nine. So, I think that'll naturally develop there.
Okay, Dave, your comment?
Yeah, that's going to agree with you. And I saw you posted someone on Twitter saying you had the answer, and I was kind of waiting with bated breath this morning to see what it was. And I had a similar conversation with a guy last night. I think if someone's knocking on the door of the first team, then I'm sure he would have put them in the squad. But I think there is that very valid point that the under-21s had a game on Monday. They'll have been preparing for that, and they'll be doing their post-match stuff from that to not be included. I guess I was surprised that both Raf and Tain Anderson, who's a guy that's been getting a little bit of a noise about him, who's a left back, neither of them played in the under-21s on Monday. And I did think, I wonder whether they're being kind of armed to be in the squad for last night, but they're not. So maybe they've both got an injury. I don't know. But that was kind of just the point I want to add on to agreement with Ian.
Okay. Well, as I say, I didn't see the game, but I did watch the highlights. Memorable for three incidents, two with Tommy, one with Sykes. I'll let both of you give your views on all of them. You first, Dave. Tommy's header, Sykes brought a save, Tommy one-on-one. That's successive games he's had that. And I know he scored the pen, but... you know, we should have gone in 2-0 and converted, or 1-0, converted one of those three, shouldn't we? Yeah,
but that's football. The hardest thing in the game is to stick the ball in the back of the net. You know, I think Tommy's header, I think, hit him more than anything. I think Zach's run right in front of him and, you know, try to get on the end of it before him. And I guess the striker, you kind of should anticipate that Zach's not going to get the touch and do a bit better. So, yeah, it was a good opportunity. The one-on-one, you know, funny enough, doesn't even count as a chance in the stats because he didn't get a shot off. But it's funny, I was talking to someone else at the weekend about the one-on-one he had on Saturday, and I would have gone round the keeper to the left on Saturday, but I thought the keeper did ever so well because to kind of position himself and make himself very big and. Yeah, don't get me wrong, it's a good opportunity and you kind of hope he's going to score, but I think it's surprising how many one-on-ones are missed by footballers across the Championship. And Tom is, in fairness, a pretty decent finisher, and I think, you know, he'll probably bag the next one. And then Sykes' header, what a wonderful save from the keeper. I thought it was a really difficult chance for Sykes.
Saving the one-on-one and then the header, yeah, he did.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, Sykes... Sykes to kind of head a bouncing ball that's been pinged across the box. I thought he did really well to kind of get it on target and then, you know, kind of waiting for the net to go and the keeper's clawed it away from nowhere. So, yeah, but a bit unlucky. They had their chances as well, though. So I don't think we should forget that in the first half.
But City played side. Well in general, didn't they, Dave? You know, so, I mean, I've only highlighted the three chances, which is what I saw. They were the highlights. But were you impressed that first half? Was it the best of what we'd seen on Saturday against Borough?
Yeah, I thought we moved the ball well. We sat in, but what we did do when we did win the ball back, and typically we won it perhaps off their midfield rather than off their forwards, we were then able to kind of spring into attack, and we got to good positions. And there were a couple of bits as well where we did get into good position, and then we kept the ball and we waited for the right moment. I think there was one where we ended up, I think Sam Bell had come in off the right-hand side and we played it around a bit, and then we went out wide to Mark Sykes and Akers on the left, and then he cut in and had a shot that got deflected wide for a corner. So we showed that little bit of patience as well. So, yeah, I pretty much enjoyed the first half. There were lots of positive signs there.
Ian, would you endorse Dave's view and take us through those individual chances? You know, I mean, I hear what Dave said that, you know, well, that's football. It happens like that sometimes. But law of averages, you want to get one of those, and then it is a different game, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think if we'd have gone in at halftime 2-0 up, I'd have put decent money on us winning the game. You know, you forget 2-0's an awkward lead. I mean, I'd rather be going 2-0 up than 2-0 down, that's for sure. We were the better team in the first half, and you have to bear in mind they've got Herberts down there on 50, 60 grand a week. So our players aren't going to be, or shouldn't be, individually better. And it's all right saying, well, you know, they sold Ward-Prowse, they sold some of their better players. Yeah, so wait, we sold Semenyo and Scott. And if they'd have been playing last night, I think we'd have definitely won. So I was very pleased with the first half. I mean, they all looked like they knew what they were doing. It was one thing about the fullbacks. People keep saying, "Oh, why don't George Tanner get forward more?" And I've said before, if I was a fullback in that team or before Manning got there, I'd be absolutely terrified at going forward because we lose the ball high up the pitch. Happened for the goal last night, to be honest. We lost possession in our final third. 10 to 15 seconds later, it's in the back of the net. So that's something that shows that we didn't get that phase of play right, and that'll happen. But yeah, I mean, with the three at the back, it gives the fullbacks, the wing backs, more license to get forward. And if we were playing wing backs normally, you'd expect to see Mark Sykes on the right and Campering on the left. But I thought George Tanner was one of our best players last night. I think he had a really good game defensively. He got forward, he showed he can attack and he can cross the ball. So I think he can play there, but it's that, I'll call it a comfort blanket of knowing he's going to be covered when he bombs forward.
Yeah.
Because of injury, unless we blood one of the youngsters I've been talking about, we're probably going to have to revert to a back four on Saturday, I would guess. I'd still make some... make another tactical tweak in playing 2-4.
Let's talk about Saturday, Sunday.
In terms of last night, Tommy has been a good finisher. He's lacking confidence at the moment. On Saturday, Dave said he'd have tried to take the ball around the keeper. Shows we're all different because I'd have tried to dink it over him when he came out and he was down. It wasn't like he came out and stood up for a long time. He came out and got down quickly. I'd have tried to dink the ball over him. And last night, I think he should have taken the shot earlier before the keeper was set or could get set. There was a big change in finishing. Wayne Allison had a season when he started scoring goals, he was missing. And he'd been coached to take the shot earlier. Don't get so close to the keeper. Don't give him the option of coming out and smothering it. Now, sometimes you can't help that because you just haven't got any room and you're 8 yards from goal and the keeper's right on top of you. But other times, like Saturday and like last night, Tommy ran through, so he had more choices. But as he got close to the keeper, those choices completely diminished. The header, I think he must have been unsighted by
Zach. Because he lurched back, didn't he?
Well, the ball hit him more or less.
Right in front of him, Ian.
Yeah, and it looked like that because it was like, oh, I'm not going to get it. Oh, shit. And it went over the bar. And, yeah, we've done that. So, yeah, do I think Tommy's a real good player and on his day a real good finisher? Yes, but he needs to get goals, needs to be confident, which is why I'd start Cornick next to him because he needs some help. And however we play, we're not suddenly tomorrow, you know, and I some of the comments after three games, I could cry. I really could, but I won't. We're not going to start suddenly playing cosmic football with exactly the same players.
Of course we're not.
I'm ever so sorry and all that, but it's not going to happen.
No.
So, you know, people say, well, I can't see much difference. I can. I can see difference. But I'd like to see, I'd like to see him have a partner up there because I think it would make us a better attacking team. And we definitely need that against Norwich because they're a team that are good in attack and they can't defend.
Well, oh no, that's absolutely true. They're having a bit of a mixed season, aren't they? Dave, what we have seen, it's a bit worrying. We've had two games now where we've conceded goals immediately after the restart, you know, and Borough, they came into that game, one defeat in 12, so they probably got a roasting from Carrick, and within 52 minutes on the clock, the lead had gone. Last night, yes, it was a worldie, but 47 minutes gone, as Ian said, the play, 1 minute we were attacking, next minute, 15 seconds later, the ball's in the back of the net. It was a worldie, but is that a worrying trend? I know it's just two games that Liam Manning will say, come on, you know, we got to be on our mettle in that first 10 minutes after the break.
I think you answered it when you said it's just two games. For me, it's I'll wait for a lot longer before I kind of think it's a trend or not. I think as well, the goal last night was completely different to the, you know, the one we conceded Saturday. So I don't see a trend. I think goals go in at all manner of time. You know, I did some analysis early in the season trying to look at, I always felt that City conceded chances in batches, i.e. we didn't take the sting out of the opposition. And I did it up until Nigel got sacked, and there's not really anything conclusive in it at all. So, you know, goals go in at whatever time they go in. We probably did have a trend at one point of conceding late goals. I think that was down to fitness and mental fatigue or whatever, because at the time we were a poor side trying to rebuild, and, you know, eventually we caved in, and that happens with poor sides. I'll wait a few more games and see what happens. But
Do you think he should have been closed down a bit, Dave? Do you think he should have been closed down?
Yeah, I think Matty James can do a bit better, but I think you also look at it and think, you know, you're showing a right back onto his left foot from just outside of 20 yards away, you know, with kind of bodies in the way, and it took a perfect shot to beat Max O'Leary. So, yeah, kind of shit happens, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly did. And it was a decisive goal. Ian, do you agree with Dave? Yeah, you're not going to stop a worldie like that. It was in its own way, not the same, but to some extent, a bit like TGH's goal.
It was identical to a goal we conceded against Burnley at home last season, where we show the guy
Benson,
who was actually a left-footed right winger, as is the modern vogue. Showed him onto his left foot and he said, thanks very much, and stuck it in the top corner. And that time the offending player was one Alex Scott, who didn't get close enough to stop him doing it. Now, great shot, and I'm taking nothing away from the lad, but if Matty James had been half a yard closer to him, that shot would have hit him. So it's like all goals. All goals at some point are preventable. Saturday, we threw two in the net for him. Particularly the Zach goal. I don't know what Zach was trying to do, but whatever it was, he should have done anything else but that. But once again, as Dave said, stuff happens, doesn't it? So, and Zach has been the giant for us for the last season and a half.
Yeah.
So, you know, we say, right, okay, next time that happens, we do this. And up until then, I don't think Max had been really troubled. You know, it wasn't like there were shots coming in from all angles.
Pepper the goal. They didn't pepper the goal, is what you're saying, Ian.
Yeah. Well, they had five shots on target all night. Well, okay, we only had one. But that is a little bit of a quality issue. But on Saturday, we had eight on target out of 10. So it's like Dave said, you know, you can't take two of anything and call it a trend. Let's have a look and let's decide if we can let's decide if we can improve those things. Obviously, coming back to it, it's going to be subject to the number of players that you can put on the field. And for example, Naismith, based on previous injuries, he's going to miss at least 10 games if it is a hamstring. Please God, it was a bit of cramp in it, and he'll be out there on Saturday, but I don't think so. And you know, you can't expect... that was the main thing, or one of the main excuses, call it reasons, where you think, well, when have we been able to get what we would call our best 11 on the field? And it's rare, if never.
And that's the argument for those in the we should never have got rid of Pearson, that he's not been able to get his best 11 on the field this season. I mean, Dave, why were we so, and again, I didn't see the game, so I'm just going on what people have said, why were we so abject in the second half? Because, you know, there was such a turnaround, wasn't there, from what I'm reading, what people have said?
Yeah, I think Ian said earlier that Southampton upped it. I think Southampton did a couple of different things. We didn't play as well. I think there is something in when you spend a lot of time chasing the ball and getting back into shape, it's kind of tiring for them when you do get the ball. And I think if we look at, I was watching the pod the other day from the one you did at the weekend, and I think Ian referenced Leicester, where I think it might have done anyway, where when we got the ball there, we just gave it straight away. And that's what happens, because you're working really, really hard to get the ball back. And then when you've got it, you're a bit kind of lacking in that kind of clinicalness to be able to do something with it. You know, we gave away, you know, some 10-yard passes in that first half when we played well, because you thought, actually, you know, we've just spent 10 minutes chasing it around. That's an exaggeration. But that's what happened. And I think second half we came out and we couldn't get going, and therefore we couldn't kind of get ourselves back into the game, and we therefore struggled. Southampton became dominant. They had a goal to defend as well, which meant that they didn't really have to come at us either. I think game states are really important in football as well, and they kind of change how the game works. Southampton at 1-0 could really resort to playing Russell Martin ball and just knocking it around. I think they did some slightly different things, and I think we did some slightly different things from what we did in the first half. In the first half, when people like Alcaraz dropped into that little pocket, after he'd swapped over with Armstrong and Adams, our centre-backs came and followed him because they knew they had, you know, Naismith or Viner or Dickey were doing the covering behind. Second half, that didn't happen. Mm. And then Ian referenced early on that when people like Alcaraz turned our midfielder, suddenly he had space to drive into. And that's because we'd not done the first part of that. So you kind of... Some probably like Matty James probably think, well, if he goes through me here, I know that Dick is going to be 2 yards behind me and he's going to snaffle up, you know, a touch. And that wasn't there. And they suddenly then were able to play in our third rather than play in front of our third or our defence. And that was the big difference for me in the second half, was we never really got ourselves into the same shapes that we did in the first half. And I kind of hoping Liam Manning picks up on that, or, you know, if
is that due to the upside, Dave? Is that due to the opposition not allowing us to get in those shapes, or
yeah, you know. and you know, just tweaking a few of the things that they did as well. But I think, you know, the goal means that they can just pass and pass and pass. They don't have to try anything clever. And I could just go back to kind of Middlesbrough game on Saturday. I thought our best spell in that first half was after Middlesbrough. And this is will sound derogatory, and it's not meant to be. It's probably actually a bit of praise. Was I think Middlesbrough got a bit bored that they couldn't break us down, so they tried to start doing things a little bit more cavalier. Is that the right word? Mm-hmm. And we picked them off, and we started to break on them, and that's effectively where all of our chances came from on Saturday was transition, and. What we weren't able to do last night was kind of pinch the ball and get into transition in the second half. And therefore, we couldn't take any pressure off us. And it just become a kind of game where we'd spend a while getting the ball back and then we'd give it straight back. And that kind of happens. And it's happened against those better quality teams, you know, the Leeds, Leicesters and Southampton, although I don't think Southampton are in the same quality as Leeds and Leicester. But they're games where those teams are better than us.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, Ian, if you look at it, you know, we've played now the three relegated sides away from home, Leeds, Southampton, and who's the other one? Leicester, yeah? And it's been one goal margins in each of them. So, you know, you've got to say, well, we're not doing too bad, really, are we? But, you know, what?
Last night was the best performance of those three in the first half. Beyond the shadow of a doubt. Yeah. We actually went up there. Went to Southampton and we gave him a game. We gave him a fright.
Well, Leeds fans said that as well, Mandy. And Leeds fans said, you know, because we saw the comments on YouTube, you know, a lot of them, they said, you're the first team that went to Elland Road and tried to take us on, you know, and we scored in that one, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, I don't ever like it. I mean, look, if we draw Man City away in the FA Cup and we go up there, we don't want to, you know, give them a game of football and lose 8-0. Or 8-2, something like that. So I appreciate in games like that, you have to be a lot more defensive, attack entirely on the break, press them very occasionally because they'll play through you, round you, over you, go past you, anything you like. Because then you're not talking about 50, 60 grand a week players. You're talking about 250 to 300 grand a week players. Mm. And it does make, I keep talking about money, but it does make a massive difference. So in any walk of life, not just football. I was, like I say, pleased with the first half. Second half, it was the stuff that Dave said. We didn't do what we were doing in the first half. Now, that's probably 50-50, us not doing it, 50% Southampton not letting us. And that's really all you can say about it. But I certainly wasn't disheartened.
No. Okay, Dave, the substitutions, Naismith went off with an injury on 70, but then there was a double substitution of Cornick and Vyman coming on for Bell and Conway. I mean, Andy Vyman's not on his game at all at the moment. Sam Bell's having a bit of a tough time of it. What do you think of the timing of the substitutions and Sam Bell and Vyman and Cornick's contribution? I'll ask you the same question, but you first, Dave.
I'm thinking in terms of timing, we needed to seem like we needed to make a change. We needed to find some way to get back in the game. Southampton were, you know, dominating the game at that point without necessarily creating tons and tons, although they looked a bit of a threat. So I think, you know, timing wise, about time to make a sub. I didn't think Andy did hardly anything when he came on. You'll know I'm normally pretty favourable about Andy, but I don't think he got into the game last night at all. I thought Harry Cornick did all right. And you know, people are laughing at his heavy touch. Well, once again, that happens all over. You ran 50 yards with the ball. And you kind of get into that moment where you need to make the really, really clinical decision and you kind of, you're a bit gone and he just overran it. But I thought he made another decent contribution. I think he's proven to be a useful member of a mid-table squad.
Would you play him up front like Ian's suggesting in a two, you know, looking forward to Sunday?
I kind of, you know, without getting into formations, because I'd be hypocritical if I did, but I think what we do need is we need someone closer to Tommy Conway, or we need two forward type players playing closer together somehow, however you do that. You know, probably hark back to last season with when Semenyo was still here. Semenyo played halfway between a left winger and a centre forward, and therefore he was close to either Naki Wells or Tommy Conway, whoever he was partnering. And also that meant that they had a physical beast up there with them who could take a bit of the centre half battering that they might get. So I think Ian's right. We do need two up there. How we play those two is, you know, up for Liam Manning, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Ian and Andy Vine, you know, Sam's having, yeah, I know he scored, was it four or five goals this season or what have you, and he did well for England the other week, but, you know, he does look a little bit like a little boy lost out there at the moment. And Andy Vyman, yeah, well, Dave, mildly critical there, and he isn't usually. I've been saying Andy Vyman, you know, not on it at all this season. So you weren't going to shake it up. And then Anis came on with 15, 20 minutes, if you include added time. How did he play in what was a cameo? Because I thought he did all right in the little showing he did on the Saturday against Borough.
Well, he had an opportunity when he got himself into the box and he was fronted up by two defenders. And during the watching the training clips, they were getting him to finish with his left foot quite hard across the keeper or up to the keeper's near post. So because he lacks confidence and lacks belief, he came in on his right foot straight into the two defenders and couldn't get a shot away. And that is... it was a little bit like the Saturday one where he actually forced the keeper to make a decent save with his left foot. And that's what he should have done last night. So he didn't... I don't think he did much wrong.
Did all right, didn't he? He did all right, didn't he?
He did all right. I thought, like Dave, I thought Cornick was Cornick. He was effective. He was a pest. He was a nuisance. And he did every bit as well as Tommy, because Tommy was isolated and anonymous, was how I described him in the second half. I thought Vyman and Williams were anonymous when they came on. You wouldn't have known Andy was playing. Joe Williams didn't do great. So I think you start to cast your mind to, well, what do we think is going to happen in January and what do we think is going to happen in the summer? And as you know, we've got eight guys out of contract. And I think at the moment, only Matty James is looking like someone you'd offer an extension to based on how he's doing now. But it does depend at the end of the season. And there's still a lot of time left in the season.
Oh, God, yeah.
People to go from zero to hero.
Absolutely. I just want to read some of the text comments that have come up here. Ross Edwards says it was like attack versus defence training exercise in the second half. Peter Wills said we look better, but what we lack is a finisher, too lightweight up front. Steve Taylor, sorry, guys. Who's the 16-year-old that was mentioned in the fans forum? I don't know what that's about.
It wasn't mentioned unless anyone knows who they're talking about.
And then Matt Moore said, I thought Tanner looked much better and more attacking. Tommy needs to have taken one of those chances, although difficult to see in the away end. So, okay, we're at the end. Last day of November today. We've got a batch of five games coming up in the next 19 days. That's December the 3rd, Norwich, and then Hull on Friday the 22nd. That takes us to the halfway point in the season. I've just done a quick calculation. 8 points. That's three against Norwich. Draw at Huddersfield. Lose at Blackburn. Beat Sunderland. They lost at home to Huddersfield last night. Get a point at home against Hull. 8 points on the 25 that we got. That's 33 points at the halfway station. Double it. 66 points. That's what we are, Dave, isn't it? You know, until Summit changes, we're that mid-table 12th, 11th, 10th, yeah?
I think so, yeah. I think it's going to be difficult for Liam Manning to, you know, turn us into a top six side that the hierarchy think we are already without investment in players. And I can't see any deviation away from that. I think what we have got is a team that will work hard, they'll stay in games, they'll be competitive, but we'll always be around that plus one, minus one goals for or against, I think. And that's the kind of side we are at the moment. And that'll leave us in that kind of mid-table position. You know, my cards on the table with Liam Manning. I think he's, in terms of the manager to come in and continue what Nigel Pearson has been, I think it's a good choice. I'm right behind the guy, you know, and I, yeah. You'll know I love Nigel Pearson, but I'm right behind Liam Manning, and I think he's coming in at a good point. He's got a reasonable squad, but it does need improvement, and you know, and he needs probably a get a couple of players back from injury without losing any more players through injury as well. So, yeah, I'm hoping that we can get to the window and through the window and still be in a similar position to what we are now, you know, 4, 5, 6 points off of the playoffs, because that means if you do have a run, you'll be in the playoffs. And, you know, and if we do strengthen the squad and we have a run, then we give ourselves a chance. But I think that's what he needs to do for me. And I'm saying I listened to every single one of his interviews so far. I thought the one at the fans forum, I think he actually meant that the fans forum actually kind of came out with a little bit of a success, because I thought it was pretty poor apart from him, and he shone massively above the other three.
The general view was that he was the best performer at the fans forum.
Oh, by a country mile. So I like what he says. You know, it's not about what he says, though. It's about what we do on the pitch. I think there's some little things I can see that are different. I don't think they're having a major impact in terms of overall performance and overall results. I don't expect them to either, because we're stuck with the players we've got. And I don't think they're a bad bunch of players, but we lack the quality. Ian mentioned it just now that, you know, you add Antoine Semenyo and Alex Squad to that team last night, we look a different kettle of fish. Oh, but that's... that's down to you know, players' ambitions, and also the club's ambitions of not backing,
not spending enough
not
money.
Backing
as you said, if they'd have bought a couple more players of the,
I get a bit frustrated by people saying, "Oh, well, they obviously didn't want to back Nigel Pearson." Well, how ridiculous is that? In my opinion, it's that they should be backing the football club, and why waste half a season on not backing the manager because you don't like him, when you could actually have had two more players in, and you could be sat there in the playoffs now, couldn't you?
I do think, though, I don't think they liked him, and it's their train set, and people who run their own businesses, you know, and you'll agree with this, Ian, people who run their own businesses, they make some crazy decisions, you know, and clearly he'd rattled the wrong cages. I mean, Ian, you know, just picking up on the point, not so much about the Lansdowne and Pearson, but, you know, I predicted 8 points from the 5 games prior in up to the 22nd of December before you get a little break before Boxing Day. Takes us on to 33. You know, that's starting with 3 points against Norwich. 3 of those 8 against Norwich. Not going to be easy Sunday, is it?
The championship games aren't. You've got this... I don't want to get fixated, because I think a lot of people are, with the parachute payments, but they create an uneven playing field, and it's not slightly uneven, it's highly uneven. Now, when you get clubs that come down and they've got top class players as well, so they not only get the 42-43 million first year parachute payment, they sell their better players. So for example, Leicester sold James Morrison for 40 odd million. They sold Harvey Barnes for about the same money. So they've got that on top of the 100 million. And they're a good sized club with their attendance wise, sort of around the 32,000-35,000 mark. So you'd expect them to do well. And that is, we can't, how do you deal with that? Well, what you'll have to do is do the stuff they're talking about and give the other clubs in the EFL more money and gradually phase the parachute payments out, which for Premier League clubs is a bit like turkeys voting for Christmas. So, but the government have now said, well, if you don't do it, we're going to legislate and we'll make you do it. So come up with a plan, guys, because, and the parties of all colours, blue, orange, red, are saying the same thing. So they know they're not going to get away with it. So apparently they've got a bank just slightly shy of a billion that they're going to spread across the rest of the game. But they can't agree at the moment exactly how, which once again is no surprise. But if they think they're doing it as a delaying tactic, it really won't work, and they're going to get hammered by a regulator. That'll help. But once again, I look in the top three, and I can also see Ipswich.
Hull.
Are West Brom still getting any parachute payments, Dave?
I think this is their last season. I can quickly check for you and carry on. I'll have a look.
So you've got those three up there. You've got Preston up there, who definitely ain't getting parachute payments. And Blackburn. Now, Preston are up for sale. You can buy them for 40 million quid. They're 70 million in debt. So once again, they're half the clubs in the Championship are up for sale. Then probably there are more that haven't just openly come out and said, yeah, we're up for sale. I mean, we know from what Steve said that if he gets the right offer and it's right for the club, in other words, it's not an asset stripper, then they would go with it. But John updated us and said, no news. And there probably ain't going to be any news. Not in the world we live in at the moment. People aren't queuing up to buy Championship clubs.
Now, West Brom are out of parachute payments. They only got the 2 years worth because they went up and straight back down. The other teams with parachute payments this season are Watford, below Southampton, us. Obviously, Norwich,
Leicester,
Leeds. Yeah, those are the five teams
Watford with parachute payments. Those with parachute, Watford and Norwich. I didn't realise Norwich was so far down. Yeah, they've lost nine. Watford and Norwich, both with parachute payments, and they're below us in the table.
It still needs to be managed, coached. But obviously, if you have got that money, it helps you. It certainly helps you in terms of not being in breach of the profit and sustainability rules. So, yeah. I think the investment is key. I think they've made it clear, and I've asked them personally, Gavin, that money would be available if the right players are available. I mean, anybody thinks we're going to outspend £5 or £6 million on the strikers living in la-la land, but there are plenty of good players that are available in the loan market, and other clubs utilise them. Now, with the loan market, as Liam Manning said the other night, you don't want to close the pathway, but if someone's not quite ready now, then a loan player is a very good player to come in and fill that gap. So you bring them in. It's also try before you buy in some cases.
Like we've done with Taylor Garvey.
Exactly right. And we've got, there are players out there, deals to be done in things that are available. And I think the board will sanction it. I also think on the subject of Nigel, if Nigel would still be the manager of the football club if he hadn't started throwing hand grenades. You can't do that with an owner. I've worked for owners, and it's not like working for a manager or a CEO or an MD. You know, you've got to go about things. I wouldn't say with kid gloves. You've got a lot of the time. I used to do it by making him think it was his idea, not mine. But not everybody can do that. I can be mucking bullets, but I mean, I think Nigel is next level mucking bullets. And I think that in the end, it came to a head, and he knew exactly what he was doing because he wasn't daft, and he'd been in football a long time and worked with owners previously. So yeah. I didn't dislike. I mean, anybody thinks I dislike Nigel has got it wrong. I didn't like a lot of the football we played, and I didn't like the results.
Identity. Guys, I know.
Would I have a point with him? Yeah.
Two of us.
I think we did have identities, Dave. I kind of really disagree that we didn't have identities under Nigel Pearson. We had several because of the players we had. You know, we go back to, you know, we had an identity under when we played WSM, and that we played counter attack. We played back three, and we, you know, went from there. Then we kind of started to transition last season, and then we moved to a back four, and we tried to be a bit more controlled. So we have, I think it's, you know, this isn't aimed at you, it's aimed at a whole host of people. There is a kind of lazy view out there that we didn't have an identity, we did. And all of the things that Liam Manning talks about in identity tend to be non-football things. They talk about hard working, running through brick walls for each other, culture, all those kind of things.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Nigel Pearson's put in place. And that's, I think Liam Manning must be looking at thinking, I've got a gig at a higher league club, and I'm taking over a club that doesn't need to kind of avoid relegation. He must be thinking this is a really good opportunity for himself. And I Absolutely. Think he's the right person to take it on as well. So.
And if he does moderately well here, he'll become attractive to other people. And because he's personally ambitious, he will probably move on. Yeah,
now, that's good though, isn't it? That's you know.
Well, that's good because as we've said, when was the last Bristol time City's a City manager better, left? Yeah, sorry.
You know, when was the last time? That's what that's what we want, isn't it? We want Bristol City to be doing well, whoever's in charge. And you know, and if it happens to be Liam Manning, he goes on to something better. I guess it's a bit like Joe Jordan when he went off to Hearts all those years ago. You know, he left the club in a good position because it was doing well, wasn't it? And that's ultimately what we want.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly right. No. I've never come across a City fan in real life that wanted us to lose because of the manager. I've never met one. I dare say from stuff I read on social media, they're out there. But you made a good point earlier on, Dave, about people with agendas. You know, there are the cult of Nige, and there are people.
I'm in that, Ian. I think if people are listening to this today, think they would know that actually. You can like someone, but it doesn't mean you have to dislike Liam Manning either. I don't see why people can't divorce opinions.
Well, like I said, I didn't dislike Nigel. I disliked a lot of the football, and I didn't think we were going to get we were going to go anywhere under him. I didn't think we were going to get relegated this season either. No. So I think it depends. If you know the board, give them to their credit or possibly to their demerit. Have made the change. Now, Liam Manning is the absolute antithesis of Nigel Pearson. Liam Manning's not coming. It's not a basket case. He's coming to a club that is, you could call it, an established championship team. And he's said himself, you know, I'm coming into a situation here. He's going to need to work hard and coach. But they've made that change. And they've also, as importantly, I think, made some pretty serious changes to the medical and fitness team.
Yeah, yeah.
Because once again, they've obviously woken up to the fact that we just keep getting a pile of injuries. Yeah. And something somewhere has to be wrong. And I know other clubs get injuries. I know if you look at Newcastle at the moment, they've got a lot of injuries. United have had them. And by the way, anybody that's moaning about Max O'Leary, go and have a look at the bloke they bought for 50 million quid.
That well, they paid for him about 40 million.
He might be good with a ball at his feet, but he ain't very good at keeping it out the net. but I'm hopeful, and I don't care. I really don't care if Donald Duck's the manager. If he can get us Premier League football, then that's God it. Bless him.
Okay. No, I think you're right. I mean, I think the thing is, we've said we're very much like Dave. You know, we're Nigel did lots of good things. You said about the identities, Dave. You talked about multiple identities because it was a back three, then it was a WSM, and he had multiple identities, but we never had one that we stuck with, not for any other reason, because of just circumstance, you know? I mean, when we went from a back three to a back four, that seemed to stumble on that, and that promoted the good form. But, you know, WSM...
It was in a cup game against Swansea, wasn't it? Just quickly... we're playing Norwich on Sunday. Mm. In terms of home form, City are now in current form. We're the seventh best team in the division. We've picked up 67% of the points on offer. Okay. 1-4, drew none, lost two. Scored 11, conceded 17. Now, Norwich away are 18th. They played six, won one, drew one, lost four. They've scored 10 goals in those games, but they conceded 17. So they picked up 4 points, which is 22% of the ones they played for. So we shouldn't go into that game with fear, but we're going to need to defend properly against them because they're a side that will score goals players. Against
well,
you.
Well, we can see how that went because we'll be recording our Norwich Review podcast at 7 o'clock on Sunday evening. It's time to wrap this episode up. Thanks to Dave for coming on. always welcome. We could talk for ages more, I'm sure, about you know, who we should buy or whatnot in the transfer window, because it's going to be very interesting. Never a dull moment watching City. Ian, thanks as always. Thanks to those of you that have taken the trouble to listen while we've been recording live.
Thanks,
on
guys.
YouTube. Everybody, have a good day, and let's hope for 3 points on Sunday lunchtime against Norwich. All the best, everybody. Goodbye.
God bless all. Bye-bye.
Cheers all.
Bye-bye. What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin's out, bobbing along. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.